Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. The topic, Unrolling Artificial Intelligence Surveillance, Monitoring, and Data Collection Under the Specter of the COVID Pandemic. And now to my guest, Whitney Webb. Whitney is a professional writer, a researcher, and an outstanding journalist, and a senior staff writer and reporter, and also for Mint Press News. She's frequently writing for The Last American Vagabond, and she hosts the podcast Unlimited Hangout. Her focus is on investigating some of the most ignored and underreported stories that address the military and intelligence institutions, big tech, surveillance, government overreach, and also the current COVID pandemic and vaccines. And she's appeared on the Real News Network, Media Roots, The Zero Hour, etc. She's currently completing a book about the Jeffrey Epstein scandal and contributing to a new book on the coronavirus epidemic authored by Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, who we've had on this program several times. You can read her in-depth investigations at mintpressnews.com. Also, muckrack, muckrack.com, or thelastamericanvagabond.com. Nice to have you with us today, Whitney.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
I'd like to start off about perceptions. And what is your perception of what many call the deep state? Depending upon what side of the aisle or political ideology one holds, being defined as the main players differently. For example, for decades, it was considered that anyone who was with the CIA, especially its head or the National Security Agency, especially its head, or some of the other deep intelligence states, that you would always approach whatever they were offering and saying with skepticism. Now, the corporate left, the corporate Democratic Party, headed by Hillary and Bill Clinton and Barack Obama for many years, they embrace these voices. In fact, Clapper is with one network, and the former head of the CIA, Brennan, is with another one. And yet, it was Frank Church, Senator Frank Church, in hearings back in the mid-1970s, who showed for the first time that you cannot trust these organizations. They are not there to protect the American public. They're engaged in regime changes. They lie. They have enormous control over the media. In fact, at that time, over 1,200 media relationships, including one with Mr. Luce, who owned Time Life. And today, virtually all of the mainstream media is beholden to groupspeak. So it's Russia. And not that you have any research on this, but just the latest example is when we have an actual whistleblower who did business with Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, and his brother, and who has now, as of last night, gone public. He was on Tucker Carlson for the full hour. And he laid out very methodically what these people, this family, was about. The media will not touch the story. All they'll say is Russia, Russia, Russia. And yet for almost 4 years, they have blamed Russia for the loss of Hillary Clinton's election, even though four separate investigations, including by the FBI, by Mueller, by Congress, has shown that's not true. So in your answer, I'm connecting, and this is subjective, most of the mainstream media with the deep state, and the deep state with major corporate players, not all, but ones who, like the Silicon Valley people that control Facebook and Wikipedia and Google, I can connect all those together. But the average American finds this a little overwhelming. It's just too complex. So this is a very complex issue. Please take your time and try to unwrap this deep state technological control over our lives using the weaponization of the coronavirus pandemic for their own ends. They'll say this is all nonsense. Let's see what you've done on uncovering what role these characters and people and industries play in our lives. The forum is yours.
Well, the term deep state, unfortunately, has been very politicized since the 2016 election, which has been used by some people in the media to discredit the concept. So I tend to refer to it as the military and industrial intelligence complex. What the deep state, I guess you could say, that we have now is slightly different than the deep state a few decades ago, but it has long been very cozy with the corporate sector, and that also includes the corporate media. As one example, when InQtel was created by the CIA, the CIA's venture capital arm, they chose Norm Augustine to head that. He had previously been, I believe, an undersecretary of the Army, but also the top executive at Lockheed Martin. And so he was put in that position at the CIA, just showing how a key figure, for example, in what is normally called the military-industrial complex, has close and cozy ties with an organization like the CIA, for example. So it's no coincidence that a group like InQtel, for example, was instrumental in the rise of numerous Silicon Valley tech giants that control large amounts of the flow of information. As one example, Google received InQtel funding, and today we have Eric Schmidt, the former CEO of Google, heading the U.S. government's National Security Commission on AI, where he is joined by numerous other Silicon Valley executives, as well as top and former intelligence officials, several former and current heads of InQtel, and also top figures in the Pentagon. So that's just, you know, there's numerous examples throughout the past several decades of this apparatus, but it of course is something that has evolved over time and grown, especially due to the fact that these organizations, particularly the CIA, have not been investigated in any meaningful way since the Church Committee in the 1970s. And so they have not been held accountable for anything they have done, and their influence has continued to grow and spread within the US power structure, but also, you know, evolve in certain ways. And so, you know, I would argue that Silicon Valley by and large is very much involved with the so-called deep state, which is a fact that gets ignored very often. But essentially we are at a point where the line between Silicon Valley and the quote unquote deep state is really non-existent at this point. Most of the largest Silicon Valley corporations, Amazon, Microsoft, Google, are all contractors to the military and to intelligence. A lot of them also have partnerships. Those Silicon Valley companies, right, have partnerships with major media outlets and also control the flow of information to a huge degree, whether it's Google through search or YouTube. Another major search engine, of course, besides Google would be Microsoft's Bing. And there's numerous other examples of that. So there were several layers to your question. So excuse me if I didn't touch on all of them, but it's a very complex entity that has been corrupt at its core for a very long time and has corrupted the media over its history. But I think something that we've seen in the last several years has been an even further deepening of that trend. And I think part of this has to do with the fact, if you remember back to the aftermath of 9/11, there were some programs that the national security state or the deep state wanted to implement, but there was a public pushback from mainstream media and advocacy groups like the ACLU. And one example of a program that received that pushback was the Total Information Awareness Program that had been managed by DARPA or TIA. And it's very interesting that now, because of the coronavirus crisis, we are now seeing a lot of these elements that had previously been in that discredited and previously dismantled TIA program being implemented or suggested or proposed as part of the quote unquote response to coronavirus. But today we see no pushback from mainstream media organizations or the ACLU or organizations that, you know, in 2002 and 2003 were attempting to hold these entities to account. And so, you know, as you mentioned, since 2016, we have people like John Brennan, the former CIA director, joining a major news network, James Clapper as well. James Clapper having been provably that happened, and no one really in mainstream media bat an eyelash. We even have the case last year, for example, where we have ABC News attempt to pass off the scene at a Kentucky gun range as a battleground in Syria for the purpose of advancing U.S. foreign policy. They claimed that they would investigate how that quote unquote mistake was made. But of course, to date, they have yet to do so. And it's also worth pointing out that ABC News, after the 2001 anthrax attacks, ran a entirely fake report about how there was bentonite in the anthrax in an attempt to tie it to the government of Iraq. But of course, the anthrax used in the 2001 anthrax attacks had no bentonite in it at all. And ABC News was not held accountable for that fake story with huge ramifications then. And similarly, they continue to do much of the same and have yet to be held to account, yet to be held accountable for that. So unfortunately, the quote unquote deep state, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, has been allowed to grow and proliferate far beyond what it was even in the 1970s because of this culture of accountability and this increasing control over the media.
I appreciate that overview. Thank you. I want to go into a lot of specific areas now. Trump's Operation Warp Speed is rapidly getting to the point where it's going to distribute the COVID-19 vaccine once it's ready, and will rely upon a program called the Pharmacovigilance Surveillance System, which would be a monitoring system to track recipients of the vaccine for up to 2 years. Seemingly, its purpose is to determine the vaccine's efficacy and track side effects. Of course, much has been written, and we have done our own investigations to show that past attempts to create a coronavirus vaccine after the first SARS and MERS outbreaks were disasters. The clinical trial animals suffered a wide range of adverse effects, and all of these efforts, to our knowledge, were halted. Yet this vaccine will be fast-tracked. It will leap over standard regulatory evaluations. And worse, these are bioengineered vaccines, either using the mRNA or genetically engineered adenoviruses that have never been used before in humans. So this is an enormous experiment with a high risk potential to lead up to a catastrophic disaster. It would seem near impossible to accurately track the efficacy and safety of these vaccines, especially over a long period of time, unless there was some kind of biometric tracking device capable of monitoring certain targets in the physical body. Excuse me. Most people will think that that would require some kind of nano chip. What are we seeing being uncovered about this pharmacovigilance system? What is the technology it refers to, since we've never had it before? And how would it be implemented? And then what then would the companies such as Google and the Pentagon's Intel arm be able to do with the information if there was, for example, a downside to this? If that this was really not about monitoring people's reactions, but what if there was an additional agenda, which we have known all along for decades has always been the case? What they promise, which seems benevolent, ends up having a dark side. Please take us through this. It's very complex, and we need to have a lay person's understanding of it.
Right. So the pharmacovigilance system, as it's described, there's only really two ways they're able to fulfill their objectives. Either it will be a wearable technology, like a smartwatch type of device that lays against the skin, or it's quite possible that it would be a chip under the skin that can respond to a smartphone. When a smartphone is placed in contact to where the implantable chip or whatever terminology you want to use, when it's placed in close proximity to where that was injected into the human body. I point out the chip specifically because there is one backed by Google called Profusa. And it's worth pointing out that the head of Operation Warp Speed is Moncef Salawi. He used to be head of global vaccines at GlaxoSmithKline. And while he was there, he was a leading proponent of something that he describes as bioelectronic medicine, which is essentially implantable and injectable electronics that have alleged medical therapeutic benefits. And Profusa is set to be approved in January 2021, the same month that Operation Warp Speed says it will be delivering COVID-19 vaccines to 300 million Americans. Moncef Salawi is part of a bioelectronics company called Galvani Bioelectronics that was co-founded by GlaxoSmithKline while he was there, and was co-founded alongside a subsidiary of Google called Google Life Sciences. Below him, in the Operation Warp Speed organizational chart as the go-to vaccine coordinator for the COVID-19 vaccines that the operation is developing, is a former program manager at the Pentagon's DARPA named Matt Hepburn. And one of the things that Matt Hepburn developed while he was at DARPA was none other than Profusa itself, the origins of that company coming from the DARPA program that Matt Hepburn ran. So it's very interesting to see those two individuals leading the entire vaccine side of Operation Warp Speed, which, as I've reported before, is operating under the utmost secrecy. The contracts that they have released with the vaccine companies through Freedom of Information Act requests, only two of them really are redacted in their entirety. The other four they have yet to release, and they do not say if they will release those at a later point. Most of those contracts, save one, was funneled through a non-government intermediary called ATI, or Advanced Technology International. And by doing so, by having those contracts funneled through this third party, as opposed to being directly between the government and the vaccine contracts, not only does it prevent the public from gaining easier access to those contracts through Freedom of Information Act requests, but it also exempts the vaccine companies themselves from federal oversight and federal safety regulations that would normally apply if the contract had been forged directly by the government and the pharmaceutical companies. So essentially, these vaccine companies are being allowed to operate under the utmost secrecy and have been giving billions of taxpayer money to do so. And this is very alarming when we consider that companies, for example, like Johnson & Johnson, one of the companies developing a COVID-19 vaccine for Operation Warp Speed, whose contract has been kept from the public, has a horrendous track record when it comes to product safety. One of the more well-known and recent examples being the fact that they knew there was asbestos in their baby powder for decades and they did nothing about it. So these are not the companies we should be exempting from federal safety regulations. At the very least, it's quite alarming. And it's also worth pointing out that a lot of these vaccine companies, for example, Pfizer, has already announced that they have begun manufacturing their COVID-19 vaccine to the tune of hundreds of thousands of doses, anticipating that it will be approved at the end of this November by the FDA via an emergency use authorization, which is obviously not how this should be done. You would manufacture following approval in a normal world. But I think Pfizer is well aware of the fact that many Americans are not, unfortunately. One of the top officials at the FDA that is involved in the emergency use authorization process is the former Pfizer vice president for safety. And while she was at Pfizer, she was accused of covering up Zoloft, a Pfizer product, its ties to birth defects. And when there was a lawsuit to this effect, Pfizer attempted to block her from testifying in that court case. They did not want her to have to testify under oath about the safety track record of this product of theirs. So the fact that she's in a position to push through this vaccine is very alarming. Essentially, the way they have sold this, and you can see this in the name Operation Warp Speed, is that the speed is the most important. So the efficacy and the safety, all of that, we can worry about later, is essentially what that implies. And that's essentially what appears to be going on here. But aside from the people I already mentioned in Operation Warp Speed, Moncef Salawi and Matt Hepburn, the vast majority of the leadership is military or military intelligence, the vast majority of whom have no experience in vaccine production or healthcare, which is very disconcerting, as is the fact that CDC officials, for example, were being briefed on Operation Warp Speed by Matt Hepburn. They asked him several pointed questions, which he straight out refused to answer, which is very alarming, as is the fact that top FDA officials have told mainstream media outlets like Stat News that they have even been barred from sitting in on Operation Warp Speed meetings. So they're not only not allowed to participate, but they're not allowed to sit in on meetings. And if you look at the organizational chart, there are very few people from the FDA and the CDC that are involved in the vaccine side of things. One of the, I think the only CDC official, Nancy Messonnier, has ties, longstanding ties to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The other one is Janet Woodcock, the only FDA official in that chart, who is essentially stovepiping the, in a one-woman firewall, I guess you could say, between Operation Warp Speed and the FDA. And she oversaw something called the Sentinel Initiative, which has a sub-program called PRISM. And Sentinel is a public-private partnership between the FDA, academia, Booz Allen Hamilton, an intelligence contractor in Silicon Valley, and its sub-program PRISM, which people may remember was also the name of an NSA spying program, is the basis for this pharmacovigilance system itself. And they have been setting it up since 2009. And the idea is to monitor the safety and efficacy of vaccines after they are licensed and put on the market, essentially have people using that product or being injected with that vaccine become the guinea pigs as a way to allow these pharmaceutical companies to make even more profits, but evade even more of the normal regulations that would normally be required for those products to go to market. And so now we're seeing through Operation Warp Speed, the fulfillment of that decades-long plan to make the people that receive the vaccines in the United States the guinea pigs, and to essentially evade safety and efficacy trials that could prevent a vaccine from being put on market if adverse side effects were detected beforehand. Now the vaccine industry no longer will have to worry about that issue per this new paradigm that they're attempting to establish with Operation Warp Speed. It's also worth pointing out that Operation Warp Speed, in addition to being dominated by the military, also now includes the involvement. Of course, they haven't said the extent of their involvement, but we now know that it directly involves the National Security Agency, the NSA, the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation, or the FBI. What do all of those intelligence agencies have to do with vaccines? The extreme secrecy, the people involved, and the track records of these vaccine companies is just, it's a sea of red flags. And I'm honestly flabbergasted that more people in media, including independent media, have been unwilling to report on the obvious causes for concern in this case. But part of it perhaps has to do with the fact that last week, Google-owned YouTube said that questioning essentially the COVID-19 vaccine before it's put on the market and raising a lot of these issues was grounds for deplatforming from YouTube, an obvious conflict of interest, since we now know that Google is going to be running the pharmacovigilance system for Operation Warp Speed. But, I guess that was enough to prevent prominent YouTube channels from discussing these issues. But it's, at the end of the day, a huge detriment to the American public that they have declined to do so.
This is very confusing for the average person, because the average person will take a vaccine. They have. In fact, right now, there are at least 4 million parents in the United States who are advocates for freedom of choice. Not that they're anti-vaccine, it's just that they were completely trusting until their child or children were damaged by a vaccine, and the physicians, the pharmacists, the nurses, all denied any complicity. Oh, it wasn't the vaccine's fault, it must have been some genetic defect in your child. Even though the government under the Justice Department has to give out almost $4 billion to damage done in a very difficult court to win in, including for autism. So one area of the government that actually has to try the cases, and there's no appeal on the case, you cannot bring in witnesses, etc. It's very difficult to win, and yet they won, and says, yes, there's a neurological connection. At the other end of that, the FDA that approves this, with a board stacked on its approval schedule with pharmacy reps. So a gross conflict of interest. The CDC also has people that they bring as an advisor on these, also stacked with pro-pharmacy people. Then we look at the pharmacies themselves, the pharmaceutical companies, and we find companies like Merck and others that have been repeated violators, have been found guilty and have paid fines for doing things that in the normal course of your life or my life would be putting us in prison, including with Vioxx, a drug that was on the market for 4 years. And they knew that it would cause heart attacks and strokes, hid that, and were never brought to justice. They paid a fine. They voluntarily withdrew the product off the market, and the price of their stock went up, and everybody was happy. These are the very people who are now making the vaccines, and we're supposed to trust them. Imagine today, Whitney, if on all the major news media, you had, let's say, Rumsfeld, Donald Rumsfeld, and Dick Cheney, and Wolfowitz, and all the other people who said, weapons of mass destruction, that's why we have to go into Iraq. And what if they were brought on as the experts on vaccine safety? We would say, well, that's stupid. You all lied to us repeatedly. None of you were held accountable. And look at the mess the world is in. Is that not similar in one level of bringing in people to testify who then do not tell us the full truth, who do not show us the truth, there's no transparency, and who tell us that this is safe and effective when there's never been any science to show that any vaccine is completely safe or effective on any given individual, and yet we're trusting completely in companies, the majority of which have long track records of settling lawsuits, paying off people because their products injured or killed people, and these are the people running this? Your thoughts, please.
Well, I think it's very telling that we've seen the media over the past several years try and frame people that point out the corruption of the vaccine industry or the pharmaceutical industry and try and frame them as quote unquote science deniers, saying that there's no way or that people that question these companies are essentially questioning the idea of a vaccine itself and are therefore quote unquote anti-vaccine, preventing a reasonable and comprehensive and objective discussion about the issue, which I think is the point entirely. They don't want a real discussion of the issues as it relates to the vaccine industry. A big issue, you actually mentioned Donald Rumsfeld. It's worth pointing out that right before he became head of the Department of Defense under George W. Bush, he was a head of Gilead, a major pharmaceutical company. And he, prior to that, was also head of J.D. Searle & Co., another pharmaceutical company eventually acquired by Monsanto that was responsible for putting out aspartame, which was shown in studies to be toxic and very unhealthy and should never have been approved by the FDA in the first place. And of course, a huge corruption scandal unfolded in order to get aspartame rammed through because it would have been the first sweetener with zero calories, right? So, in terms of talking about the deep state, we have someone like Donald Rumsfeld, very involved with the Department of Defense, also running several very controversial pharmaceutical companies. Gilead, more recently, is the producer of remdesivir, which is the antiviral drug that has been heavily promoted in mainstream media as one of the best treatments to COVID-19. But it was recently revealed by armswatch.org that for another antiviral product, Gilead was hiding 294 patient deaths in an attempt and was also bribing doctors in the country of Georgia in order to keep profits up and continue marketing a product that they knew was lethal, right? And so we also had while Donald Rumsfeld was at Secretary of Defense, we had the bird flu scare, I believe, in 2004 and 2005, where the head of HHS under Bush heavily promoted, heavily ramped up the fear, saying that millions in the U.S. would die and things like that, and it turned out to be a huge boon for Tamiflu, which was owned and marketed at the time by Gilead. And believe it or not, Donald Rumsfeld held, while he was in the Bush administration, while this was going on, held thousands and thousands of shares of Gilead stock and gained an insane amount of money in profits because of that largely fabricated pandemic scare back in 2004 and 2005. So, that's just an example of how deeply connected a lot of these controversial pharmaceutical and vaccine companies are two prominent players in the quote unquote deep state or federal government. And just like a lot of the other issues that they try and prevent reasonable or objective debate on, the power and corruption of the pharmaceutical companies and vaccine companies is a major example. One company that's also a very good example of this is known today as Emergent BioSolutions, previously known as BioPort. When they were known as BioPort, they were embroiled in a massive scandal for the anthrax vaccine, which was made mandatory for U.S. troops, I believe beginning in 1998 or 1999, and ended up causing extreme negative side effects, has been linked to Gulf War syndrome back in the early 90s, but also caused a litany of problems for servicemen that were forced to receive the vaccine. And the military in that case, you know, even though there were servicemen that even were court-martialed for refusing the vaccine, there were cases where a serviceman would refuse to receive the vaccine and then would be strapped down to a gurney and forcibly injected with this thing. And then in 2003 and 2004, there was a legal case brought by members of the U.S. military that had been harmed by this vaccine, and they actually won in federal court to show that the Pentagon's mandatory anthrax vaccine campaign was illegal because they were using it in an experimental and off-label use on U.S. soldiers. Emergent BioSolutions, as BioPort was renamed in 2004, has continued ever since then to market and sell untested and unsafe products, largely to the federal government, which is their main purchaser, because they largely manufacture medical countermeasures aimed at the biodefense budget of the United States, and have largely escaped accountability, mainly because on their board of directors, they happen to add prominent people from HHS or the Pentagon who have protected their interest when they were in office and then are rewarded with lucrative stock options and positions on the company's board. And now at one of the top people at HHS, the Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response, Robert Kadlec, used to be a lobbyist for Emergent BioSolutions, since and he manages the US government's Strategic National Stockpile. And since Kadlec has been in that position, Emergent BioSolutions has been the largest winner of contracts for that national stockpile that Robert Kadlec manages. And now they have been selected to manufacture the COVID-19 vaccine for Operation Warp Speed for several of the vaccine candidates. And the person in Gaithersburg, Maryland, experience in a hard science or chemistry or anything like that. Instead, he was a longtime military intelligence operative that led covert teams through Iraq and Afghanistan and was a top analyst for North Korea and Iran for military intelligence for more than 20 years. What is he doing in charge of that factory? As they're seeking to roll out the COVID-19 vaccine, again, very odd. But, you know, a lot of these threads that I've pointed out, they're repeated with numerous other pharmaceutical and vaccine companies. So, you know, a lot of this is synergistic for the quote unquote establishment, because they're allowed to hide behind many faces, behind many industries, but a lot of times they end up having complementary agendas, and none of those agendas, I would argue, are about protecting or helping the American people.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Progressive Commentary Hour. I'm Gary Null. My guest from Chile is Whitney Webb, a professional investigative journalist, senior staff writer and reporter for Mint Press News. And her specialty is investigating conflicts of interest, corruption within the military and intelligence institutions, big tech, surveillance, government and overreach, and the current COVID pandemic and vaccines. And we're talking about unrolling artificial intelligence surveillance, monitoring, data collection under the specter of the COVID pandemic. Now I'd like to shift gears a bit, Whitney. I would like to remind people there was a time about 20 years ago on this program where I introduced research that I had from sources I had in Washington. I was 36 years every day, 5 days a week on PFW, the Pacifica sister station to WBI and KPFK, and I had a lot of contacts. And I was constantly being told that a lot of research was being done on artificial intelligence and even transhumanism. And some of the scenarios they were laying out of what they hoped to achieve were rather remarkable. On the low end of that spectrum was creating the capacity to insert genes or alter genes, in effect designer genes, that's what they were calling it, where you could create super qualities in a person. If you wanted your baby to be 6'5" and blonde and blue-eyed, they could do it, or they were looking to do that. If you wanted someone who would have incredible intelligence or greater strength, qualities that we would think came out of a sci-fi film. However, today, many of those topics have actually been not only fulfilled, but are now being promoted. Elon Musk is promoting the idea of course, benevolently helping you with your memory, but of course, the apparatus he is suggesting would also be able to read all of your thoughts and communicate through artificial intelligence into your body. In effect, you would become not just a human being, you would become a transhuman being, all for your benefit, of course. And we're also seeing in the vaccines, but they're denying it, that the vaccine would contain nanoparticles. They could then read different parts of your body chemistry and report back your heart rate, your blood sugar, all these other things. But then now we're told, whether it's true or not, we will determine in the future, when evidence becomes more available, that it can also send messages. Well, what would be the point of the message? What message could it send? If it can receive, can it not send? That part of the story has been completely avoided. And then once it's in the system, you can't get it out. There's no way to detoxify from this. And so this is all being connected to major platforms like Google and major corporations like Apple that are going to be handling this. Well, what in the world would they need to know what's going on in our body? And is it possible, based upon your knowledge of the technology where it's at this moment, to, in effect, control a person's behavior or to control any part of their body? Even if they could do that, would the public accept that?
Well, a lot of this technology has been developed largely in the years since 2001 by the Pentagon's DARPA, and later on it goes on to be commercialized by different partners. So for example, the Moderna mRNA vaccine was something that came out of DARPA. DARPA has the Profusa chip, as I mentioned earlier. They also have a program called N3, which is about reading and writing onto the human brain without an implant, with something that's just placed against the head. So, you know, it's something that the military has been driving more than anything else. And it's no coincidence that we're seeing the U.S. military's quote unquote modernization plans, which are supposed to begin in earnest beginning last year. They are openly talking about connecting soldiers' brains to swarms of drones so that a soldier can control drones with their thoughts. This, of course, may sound crazy to people, but this has been something that the Pentagon has been openly writing about in their planning documents for quote unquote modernization since at least 2016. And I wrote about 2 years ago how there were top experts connected to the UK and US military that said that the Pentagon planned to have more robots than soldiers by 2025. And similarly, the UK military also has plans to create a mix of what their top official calls boots and bots. Right. So as we often see with this type of technology developed at DARPA, there is usually a plan to make that technology widespread or marketable or to commercialize it. But oftentimes it is first tested on the U.S. military. So, you know, this is another example of that. And it's no coincidence, as I mentioned earlier, that the person driving the modernization efforts and the planning for that as chair of the National Security Commission on Artificial Intelligence is the ex-CEO of Alphabet, Google's parent company, Eric Schmidt, who is a longtime proponent of transhumanism, as is a large number of prominent Google employees, including Google's quote-unquote futurist, Ray Kurzweil, who views transhumanism and the introduction of artificial intelligence into the human brain as a way to cheat death and obtain immortality, among other things. I would argue that the roots of this transhumanism go back centuries, really, to this perception that that mankind must dominate nature, and that nature is something to be feared and conquered instead of something to live in harmony with. And so transhumanism is steeped in this view that that humanity is flawed, and that the human body is flawed, and the only way we can improve it is through technology, and that the pinnacle of human evolution will come through the merging of humankind and machines. And this is something that people like Eric Schmidt and Ray Kurzweil and a lot of these other people at Google believe in very much. And Google has really become one of the main contractors, along with Palantir, which also has longstanding ties to the CIA. They've really been intimately involved in a lot of the projects of the Pentagon to push for the introduction of these quote unquote modernization efforts into the military. And what's interesting, though, is that it's very clear that there are plans to have this go far beyond the military in the future. For example, in early September, Google and the Pentagon announced together that they were going to develop an artificial intelligence algorithm that would be able to predictively diagnose people with cancer. In other words, before you develop cancer, this algorithm developed by the military and Google would be able to determine if you will develop cancer in the future. They say in their description of the project, they plan to apply that to other diseases well beyond cancer, including COVID-19, that they will say you have COVID-19 before you even begin to show symptoms, based on this artificial intelligence algorithm being created by Google and being created in tandem with the military, with plans to make this something that is commonplace in the future of healthcare. It's worth pointing out that Eric Schmidt, before the coronavirus crisis, in discussing the push to have AI more broadly implemented in US society, said rather presciently that the greatest opportunity to push that into American society and begin that process of adapting AI into society was the healthcare industry. And so it's very interesting to see how that agenda, particularly in the healthcare industry, has advanced considerably over the course of the COVID-19 crisis, with the expansions in telehealth, using artificial intelligence algorithms to identify and discover cures, as they say, or potential compounds that could be used as therapeutics and what have you, essentially moving healthcare away from being managed by humans and having it be managed by synthetic entities, machines, and artificial intelligence. And part of this predictive diagnosing thing that Google and the Pentagon are developing is very much part of that. They say it would be to help doctors, but really it's outsourcing a human doctor's decision-making to artificial intelligence. And of course, the justification of that is, well, doctors are more overwhelmed than ever, so they must use AI in order to be able to be more efficient and things like that. But as I mentioned earlier, the plans for this have been years in the making. So it's certainly very unsettling, to say the least. And it's worth pointing out that Eric Schmidt and this National Security Commission Artificial Intelligence say that it is the only way that the U.S. can maintain military and also economic hegemony is if it adopts artificial intelligence these wearables and the surveillance technology and what have you at a rate much faster than the U.S.'s new adversary of choice, China. And that Eric Schmidt just said a few weeks ago that we must beat the AI arms race with China at any cost, right? So essentially what he's saying there is that it's this, the US society, and this is also in a document from this commission that was authored last year, that people in the United States and in US society and the economy at large have to be remade in order to incorporate artificial intelligence and these sensors and things like smart cities and things like that in order to be able to compete with China, because the way to develop a better AI algorithm, they say, is to have as much data as possible. And China has a larger population. It has mega cities on a scale the US does not have. So Eric Schmidt's plan, essentially, as he's described it, is to have that type of functionality, that smart city functionality, wearables and things like that. And changes, the move to self-driving cars, the move to cashless, among other things, all need to be implemented as soon as possible in order to enable the U.S. to develop better artificial intelligence algorithms than China. So essentially, in the name of quote unquote beating China, Eric Schmidt is arguing that we have to essentially undermine everything that has underpinned what we have known to this point to be the American way of life in order to maintain global hegemony on the economic and military front in order to stay number one. But the question is that really worth it at the end of the day?
I'd like to focus the remainder of our time on looking at COVID and how it's been weaponized. And also what they're doing is they're setting us up for what is already being discussed by the World Economic Forum and other individuals, very powerful individuals, the Davos group of about 5,000 most powerful people in the world from different fields, so that when the time comes for our own good, we will be put under massive surveillance. And a lot of the choices we have now, which are free, including free speech, those will be substantially abridged. As you mentioned earlier, when Google, that controls and owns YouTube, said that you can't mention anything that's critical of the COVID vaccines or anything involving COVID, we've doubled down and we've done 22 articles challenging everything about COVID. Yes, it's a real virus, and yes, it's killed people and can, but everything else is a lie. The figures were lies because they were attributing all deaths in many countries, many cases, to COVID instead of the actual comorbidities. And when this was later backtracked and examined, now the CDC says that a maximum of 6 to 9% of all deaths are from COVID. Well, then you don't have a pandemic. You don't even have a normal flu season. They are also taking pneumonia and influenza and grouping those as COVID. Hence, you've got very low pneumonia and influenza deaths this year, and you have a spike in COVID. They're conflating with a completely worthless junk diagnostic tool, the PCR. And I knew the man personally who invented it, won the Nobel Prize in 1996, Kary Mullis, in chemistry. And he said it should never be used as a diagnostic to determine viral activity. And yet that's exactly what they're doing. And yet it can't determine if you are currently infected or whether you had an old infection that the body killed and you're completely harmless to anyone, including yourself. That can't differentiate one COVID virus from a different one. And so they're going ahead with all these false positive readings and saying we have all these spikes, conflating the idea that you could be positive from an old viral episode or even a new one and be harmless versus being sick. And the moment they say new cases, people immediately assume you're sick with the virus. And therefore, look at all this, but they're not looking at the deaths number. The deaths are down in, like in Sweden, to one every day or every other day. It's very low in other countries as well. So we've been lied to, and I have to ask why, and why hasn't the media, and including the liberal media, Mother Jones, The Nation magazine, Democracy Now!, The Atlantic, Harper's, why NPR, why haven't they investigated this? In fact, all of them are pro-vaccine. All of them are the pro-agenda. In fact, I just heard someone sent me a clip where two guests who were talking about the dangers of these vaccines, as you have, were attacked on one of these popular liberal programs. And so I'm very concerned that the American public is not getting the truth either from the conservative or the liberal media that's been corporatized. The mainstream media is lying about everything, and you can know they're lying because they all have the same talking points. Mm-hmm. And they're all defending the status quo. They're defending the deep state characters. They're defending the CIA. Clapper lied under oath. It's a known fact. He committed perjury. They didn't hold that against him. So all this is being done, in the name of protecting us, and yet I don't see anyone out there in the media taking on these questions that you and a few others, Glenn Greenwald, you know, Chris Hedges, are taking on. What do you make of the media, especially this corporate liberal media that is completely in alignment with Eric Schmidt, completely in alignment with the pro-vaccine, completely supporting, they just want their party to benefit from it. Your thoughts?
Well, I think there may be, depending on the outlet, different reasons as to why they have declined to report on certain issues. I think it may be also the fact that there has been this effort to smear anyone who questions certain talking points related to COVID-19, dismiss them as fringe or conspiracy theorists, quote unquote, among other things. And there are some outlets, for example, Democracy Now!, that tend to shy away from anything that could, or at least in recent years, have shied away from anything that could lead to that label being foisted upon them, because it's used to discredit them and their legitimacy by the mainstream. And a lot of these outlets, more than anything else, want to be accepted as quote unquote legitimate as per the mainstream media, and are concerned about being ridiculed or hit with the quote unquote crazy label and what have you. But there are also people, of course, that over the course of the past several years have either been bought out, Democracy Now!, just to not to pick on them, but as an example, because I don't really know the finances of Mother Jones. But they receive funding from the Ford Foundation, which is in the past co-invested with things like the Rockefeller Foundation, which is intimately invested in a lot of what's going on right now under the guise of responses to COVID-19. So there's a lot of different reasons as to that. But, you know, by and large, yes, a lot of media, and including independent media, even after 2016 attempted to bring to light issues that were ignored by other outlets, have really dropped the ball on a lot of things going on here. And to go to some of the other things you were mentioning about how they were lumping all these deaths together, the CDC announced, I think it was less than a week ago, that as the U.S. is approaching what is normally flu season, they will no longer count influenza deaths, which basically sets the stage for them to manufacture a quote-unquote second wave by saying that in normal influenza deaths or hospitalizations or cases are all cases of COVID-19, which actually happened in other countries outside of the U.S. And also, as you mentioned earlier, in some parts of the U.S., they were lumping all of them, every cause of death essentially together and saying, you know, it was related to coronavirus, somehow ignoring comorbidities among other issues. So we see, this idea of the second wave, ever since the coronavirus crisis really began in earnest in March, has been seeded in the public consciousness by media to a significant degree that, oh, we have to wait out for the second wave and it's going to come in winter. And we've seen people repeat the same buzzword time and again, saying dark winter, for example. We had Biden say that at the debate. We had the BARDA whistleblower Rick Bright testifying in front of Congress, also saying dark winter, the darkest winter. Mainstream media like CNN all repeating the same phrase in implying that there's going to be some sort of pandemic too, or a second wave in the American public over the course of this coming winter, essentially preparing people to expect them something. And then we have the CDC openly admitting on their website that they're not going to count flu deaths anymore. So the normal flu, what would normally just be the flu season, is now primed to be labeled as a COVID-19 second wave. And you think people would report on this, but of course it would involve unraveling the narrative. And it's worth pointing out that you mentioned the World Economic Forum. They have developed various partnerships with certain media outlets in order to promote their quote unquote Great Reset agenda. So one example of that, one of their media partners in promoting the Great Reset, is The Conversation, which is a mainstream media website that is, you know, often gets a lot of play, even from cable news, and is considered quote unquote legitimate and things like that in terms of the world of mainstream journalism. But they're openly partnered with the World Economic Forum, which is openly, stands to benefit from the narrative of a second wave, and a lot of the quote unquote solutions the World Economic Forum is promoting the coronavirus, for example, the implementation of global identifications called digital health passports. The one the World Economic Forum is currently backing is called Common Pass. You know, all of those are set to be rolled out under the guise of combating the coronavirus crisis. And of course, if the quote unquote pandemic is allowed to end, you know, those types of solutions aren't able to be implemented or justified as easily. I think it's also no coincidence that the World Economic Forum, along with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, you know, at Event 201, this simulation of a coronavirus pandemic last year, a lot of these organizations were gaming a lot of the events that have happened since then, particularly how to media engagement strategies, how to control the narrative about what's going on. And so that suggests that groups like the World Economic Forum, you know, have sort of been waiting for an event like this. And, you know, the Rockefeller Foundation, which also is co-invests or works closely with these organizations, back in 2010 had a document where they talked about a lot of technocratic or authoritarian policies would be most easily implemented during a pandemic, would be easier to justify and implement in that particular scenario, which they referred to in that particular document as the as a scenario they called lockstep, for people that are interested in going to look that up. So, you know, a big part of that has long been the control of the media and the role of the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, as it's known now, it used to have a different name, is very telling, because they are the authors, were the authors of the June 2001 bioterror simulation Dark Winter, who in that simulation predicted the narrative of the 2001 anthrax attacks and some of the specific things that took place during those attacks. And its participants had foreknowledge of the anthrax attacks as well. And one of the key facets of Dark Winter and the subsequent simulations that this Center for Health Security has hosted, Atlantic Storm in 2005, Claydex in 2018, and Event 201 last year, has been the control of the media, how to use the media and prevent the spread of quote unquote misinformation. These organizations have been preparing for this, and how to control the narrative and how to subvert what would normally be our truth tellers in order to facilitate their specific agendas.
Okay, well, Whitney, thank you very much. We look forward to another conversation, because clearly we have a lot more to discuss. I appreciate you coming on, and we look forward to our next conversation, all right?
All right, wonderful. Thank you.
My guest, Whitney Webb from Chile on Zoom. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying.